You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, this is your host Brian Wayne here, and I'm here to let you know, in case you did not know already, that the Cheers to Comics podcast has since evolved. And if you're looking for a new shiny place to get your comic books from, then you need to head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com. It's like cheerstocomics.com, only with a shop in front of it. Shopcheerstocomics.com, and if you use code PODCAST at checkout, you're going to save yourself 10%. And I'm constantly adding new inventory, hot spec books, everything. Everything. Any type of book under the sun. As it comes under my radar and it gets added into the inventory, I make it available to you. So remember, head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com and use code PODCAST at checkout and save yourself 10%. A pre-roll time. The Cheers to Comics podcast is proudly sponsored by Inked Marketing Solutions and the Inked Marketing crowdfunded comic for this yay episode. Well, it's going to belong to The Last Night of Twilight. Coming soon from the producer of Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Batman Beyond, Static Shock, and the new Batman Superman Adventures. Yes, the man is a legend in animation. Pinky and the Brain sold right there. The Last Night of Twilight. What happens when you're broke, but your endless war against crime isn't over? The Last Night of Twilight is a story about an everyday superhero. He has no powers, he has no thirst for justice, but now his body is starting to betray him, but he just can't stop. Even a personal injury suit and losing all of his cool stuff won't stop him. His sidekick turning bad? That ain't gonna stop him. His former adversaries returning. Or retiring. Not returning. Retiring. That ain't gonna stop him. But age? Age is a son of a bitch. Age is gonna... might stop him. It might. I don't know. We have a comic book here, people. Like I said, the team behind this... I can't wait to see... Oh, I'm looking at this cover here, man. You got this pretty dark hooded-looking figure. And you got like a walker. Like an old man walker. Not a Walker Texas Ranger. Like a tennis ball on the feet type of walker. I love it, man. I love it so much. I'm into it. So head on over to www.twinight.com. That's twiknight.com. And get in on this, man. I got a good feeling. And like I said, Pinky and the Brain. Come on. Come on.
Age of Radio.
Hello again and welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wayne, and this is episode 373. The 373rd episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be a creator corner. And the creator that I cornered on this year episode is, he's a monster in the industry. He's a beast. John Jiang. I think he's the first creator I brought on that's a cover artist. That's basically the stamp he's made in comics so far, and I cannot emphasize the phrasing "so far" enough, because I feel like there's no task this man is not willing to take on, and we're going to talk all about that in depth, and quite possibly my favorite interview. I mean, this is up there, people. I'm proud of this one. had a great, great time talking with John Jang. But before we get into that, I have to shout from the rooftops about my newest affiliate, and that's going to be Nerds Forever. Head on over to 307nerdsforever.com, and while you're shopping around on one of my favorite places on the planet, it's websites to get your comic books from. I think I said all of those words wrong, but you know what the fuck. I'm excited, people. I'm excited. Head on over to 307nerdsforever.com and use code CHEERS at checkout to save even more money off already incredibly priced merchandise. So, yeah, let them know. Let them know CHEERS to Comics sent you by using code CHEERS at checkout. So, head on over. 307nerdsforever.com. And be the next to experience what I've experienced, enough to make me go, hey man, you want to be the affiliate of the show? I like quality like this. You go and experience that now. 307nerdsforever.com. 307nerdsforever.com. Now, with no further ado, I bring to you, oh man, my conversation with John Jang. Right, John Jang, how are you, brother?
Good. How are you? How are you, Brian?
Man, I'm probably a little more excited than I usually am on these things, and I've had some heavy hitters on this show, no doubt. But this is one we've been working for a while to get this thing going. You're a busy man, and if you just looked at the internet at all, and you know you're in the comics realm, you could see how busy you are because you put out content, dude. So I feel really gracious for you to be able to cut out some time in your day to be able to do this on Cheers to Comics, man. So thank you.
Oh, cheers. Thank you guys. I'm really humbled to be on, you know, like Brian's been saying, we've been trying to make this happen for quite a long time now. And, you know, scheduling and everything like that. So, you know, I'm glad to have a chance to kind of carve that in today. So, you know, again, I'm humbled to be on, Brian. Thanks for having me on. And did I hear that your show was like going bonkers or something like that right now?
I started looking at some charts and it's like chart topping on two different charts. It's top three in another chart. It's kind of surreal to see, man. It's exciting.
Dude,
especially
right on.
In comic books dominating, you know, some sort of multimedia market, because you know, I mean, there's not like there's any good comic book movies out there or anything like that. but it's time for comic book podcasts to actually have a good name, and it's not, you know, it's cool to I don't know, I got into it because people are, you know, they start a podcast and they want to talk shit about what they like, and it's like, you're never gonna get John Jang on your podcast if you talk all you spend an hour just talking about how you hate comics and you call yourself a fan. So here we are, man. 3 years later, I've got John Jang on. I've got some I'm a fan. I am. This is awesome.
I love it. I've always said that it's you know, sorry to cut you off.
Oh, you're good.
But you know, just speaking about comics, it's, you know, I always say it's you know, I've worked in film, and I've worked in, you know, various creative industries, and I've worked on, you know, the Marvel movies since Iron Man 1 and things like that. And you know, I worked on, and when we worked on that movie initially, no one really had any idea who Iron Man was, and you know, that sort of thing. And you know, I was like, shoot, like I would love to work on that movie. And the fact that I got to work on it, and then, you know, it went bonkers and it kicked off what we know as the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all the other sort of, like, you know, all the other sort of studios trying to kind of do the same thing with all of their properties and everything like that. And you know, I've always said that comic books are essentially American mythology, right? It's a way of telling these stories, you know, in graphic form and things like that. And you know, now that we're seeing them as dramas, that we're seeing them as, you know, what they've always been, as we, you know, as superhero stories, as, you know, more family friendly, you know, content, and all the wide variety of ways that you can tell a story and things like that. And I think that it's, you know, they're being, as they always have been, I think they're being mined right now for really great ideas to be converted into other IPs and, you know, other media and things like that. So I'm glad that comic books are getting, you know, their time in the sun and things like that. I mean, and it is our nature to be, you know, to as nerds to hate on things.
I mean, so. Yeah, it's natural. We got to make sure that some of it, you know, we got to weed out some of the weak stuff for sure, no doubt. But at the same time, I mean, but you know, you got to take some time to praise the shit that you love too, man. And there's just, I feel like it's really imbalanced. So yeah. I'm here to pray. Like this is what we want to see when we go to buy a comic book. I mean, if you're not drawing or if you're not buying this, it's because you're afraid of it. You know, John, like the only reason you would walk by a John Jang cover and not buy it is because it terrifies you. And I love that about you, man. But before we get too far into it, I for, you know, people like myself that just want to know where all of this came from, all of this talent. I mean, it sounds, you've been saying you've always said comic books. Did you discover comic books at a young age? Have you always been a reader? Or, I mean, when did that
come
in?
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, comic books have always been a great, again, you know, being a child of immigrants and things like that, right? It's always about, like, you know, how do we tell a story in a very sort of like I said, in a very graphic way, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, things like, you know, TV and comic books and all those things that have, like, you know, a narrative within the pictures and all of those things, they've always kind of like been that thing that's, you know, been really, you know, really connects to me. And I think always, you know, being as an artist and a visual person too, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, yeah, you know, comic books again has just been always a really great way to not only tell stories, but really be expressive and express our styles and express all of our, the way that we see the world, you know, in a yeah. very visual way. So I've always loved, you know, animation and comic books and, you know, those things. And a lot of the visual art forms and things like that. So, you know, I wasn't always an avid reader, but if nothing else, I always just look through those, like, dusty newsprints. And
there's nothing wrong with that, man. I mean, yeah. Not everyone can afford comics. With me, it was the trading
yeah.
cards.
Yeah.
Like all of my knowledge came from those, the 91 the Marvel trading cards. And that's how I started knowing my shit. You know, yeah. like I can look at people's stats, like, no, Kingpin's stats, you know, he's more than Daredevil's stats. So I mean, Kingpin with whatever. I mean, so it's, I don't know. I was a nerd in that sense, but it's cool to, yeah, I get where you're coming from there. Were you an artist before you got into comic books, or the comics, was just part of your inspiration to get into becoming an artist?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like as at a very young age, I was always kind of like doodling and drawing and, you know, that was kind of like a good outlet, kind of always, you know, making art was kind of like my way of not being bored as a kid.
Understood. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, having that opportunity and then, like, you know, walking into comic book stores and always, you know, the spinner racks and, you know, things like that, even that, like the 7-Elevens and things like that, like I couldn't always get those, but I just loved the sort of visceral sort of, like, you know, way of, like I said, maybe it's different now because kids don't have these opportunities, but again, just going and hitting a deli, a 7-Eleven, whatever it may be, and there's a spinner rack of comics, and you know, and that's the thing, you may not ever buy them, but you're just like looking at them, and some of them just become so tattered because, you know, I've seen some with the spines coming off and, you know, all those things, but it's just a great opportunity to connect with it, absorb it. And, you know, and so I've always loved it. And then I don't think until I was like, maybe I remember having my first job in middle school, things like that. And riding my bike to this job, I would always ride by this comic book shop, and it was this little tiny shop. And I finally went in and I got, you know, on the spinner rack was what was it? Amazing Spider-Man 298. And
that'll do it. Well, McFarlane action.
Well, the thing is that I've always loved, you know, back in the day, I really loved, like, the John Burns and the Buscemas, and I'm kind of like showing my age here, but, you know, and all of those guys, Arthur Adams and things of that, like, and again, they had their very expressive styles and everything like that. But really, like, something when I saw that McFarlane with, like, the big feet and chunky webs and, you know, I tell the story a lot, but it kind of, like, it really, like, unlocked something where I was like, it for a long time. And I think as any artist should at that age, you're trying to get it right. You know what I mean? You're trying to,
Well, there was the Marvel way to draw comics. That was before Todd McFarlane. You know, like Todd McFarlane tore that book up. So, I mean, I know what you mean by like you're trying to follow this formula, and then
right,
yeah,
you and see I think that I think McFarlane kind of like and with every like and not just Spider-Man, but like, you know, and then I would look at some of his older stuff that he did, and I was like, holy crap, he did like the Incredible Hulk, and he did. You know, and he did a you know, Batman Year One and things like that. And then what it was that every time he touched one of these characters, he was imbuing and infusing something of his own into these characters.
Instantly making them iconic. And I mean, and more than they've ever been. It's insane how you can make the Hulk or Spider-Man more iconic just by drawing them a little differently and giving them more expression and stuff like that.
And I think that it's not necessarily like, it's one thing to do the art, right? And I think that's the thing that people don't realize. It's if you can draw a character differently, that's always great. But to draw differently and to get it published, like, I think those are things that people don't really like. I'm sure that his Year One Batman, people were like, the editors and things like that were like, what are you doing with this cape? Like,
right?
That's not what the cape does. You know, why or why does the Incredible Hulk have this like giant brow, and why does he? You know, why is this like this hulking, like we've never seen him like that before? Why is Spider-Man so, you know, why is he so flexible? Why are we seeing the bottom of his feet all the time? His big, like those eyes are too big. Like, I'm sure that these are like discussions I had, but that's the thing, is that it's ballsy to put it on paper. It's ballsy to kind of like push for it, right? It's ballsy to say, you know, this is what I see. This is how I express it, you know? And it's always, I think sometimes the struggle sometimes with my art too, like, I think people are just like, that's just not how we see certain characters and things like that. Right.
Well,
but I think that we should push it.
Yeah. See, how do you take that when, I mean, cause you do push it with your art, no doubt about it. I'm one of my favorite covers of all time. Just I'm a real fanboy for the Batman Who Laughs. And this Deceased number 4 cover, dude, that you did, like, that is like tippy top for me, like top 5 covers of all time, probably. But I mean, that's a cover that, yes, is meant to be demented and, you know, disturbing, but then you kind of look at, you know, your Harley Quinn with the bleeding eyes. And I mean, how is stuff like that received for you? I mean, I love it. I mean, I bought it. I clearly love it, but, how do you take that?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, you know, when I used to be an art director too at like some Silicon Valley companies, and, you know, you kind of get a good understanding of like what it takes to understand a brand, right? And I think that's the other thing too, is that you know, anytime you're doing any one of these characters, you're not necessarily just illustrating, right? You're getting a good understanding of the brand, and you're getting a good understanding of the brand of that character, and you're getting a good understanding of the brand of that publisher, and all those things. And how much can you sort of like push it? You know what I mean? But the thing is that it also is incumbent, I think, on the artist to do try to push it at times, right? You know what I mean? It's, you don't certainly want to like stress it to a point where it's broken, but I think that it's good to allow. And I think that, you know, it goes to show, like, one good example is like even like Iron Man and things like that, and working on that, you know, the original movie, was that I think that was also ways that I think that we have always kind of seen Iron Man in the comic books, but I think introducing it to a new audience, you know, and knowing your audience too, that's the other thing too. And they may not understand or may not have ever seen Iron Man that way. And to kind of like do certain things, show certain gadgets, you know, all those things that normally we wouldn't see, but it is good to kind of like flex that a little bit so that, you know, we can kind of say, hey, okay, there's opportunities and possibilities that this character, this publisher, or whatever it may be, there's places we can still go. Right. And so, we got to get a slice of that every once in a while. maybe some people hearing this are like, no, we don't want that.
Well, that's just like their opinion, man. I mean, I dig it, man. I dig it. I love how you push the envelope, because it's the thing that really attracted to me. I think that the first cover that I saw of yours, I was like, who the fuck is this? Was Deceased number 1, that Joker cover.
Yeah.
And I mean, amazing. But all of your Deceased work, it's some of my favorite stuff. But your Ice Cream Man, everything you do, it's just, it's pushed, and it lets you know, like, there's so many, one of the biggest complaints in comics is, oh, I went and picked up this cover because it looked really cool, but it had nothing to do with the fucking story. Yeah. With this, like, you know, you're doing a horror book. So it's going, I mean, you know that this is Ice Cream Man. If you were just read the title Ice Cream Man, you would be like, that sounds kind of foo-foo. But then you look at that cover and John Jang's going to make sure that, you know, this is a horror book. Deceased. You're going to know that this isn't just DC's doing a lighthearted kill a few characters story. No, everybody dies. And that's one thing that you do stay true to when you do a cover as well. You let the people know what the hell you're going to get. And most of the time it is horror or horrific. And even when it's not, it's badass. Like your G.I. Joe stuff.
I appreciate it.
You know, you're going to, and it's just, it's what you want, man.
Well, the thing is that with cover work, it's kind of tough too, because I think it's a balance, right? Because you want to, it's, how do I say, it's almost like an appetizer. You want to let that person who ordered that appetizer know what kind of restaurant they're in, but you don't want to give them the full 7-course meal quite right away. You know what I mean? And I think that's the difference between like really like storytelling on a cover and like really like giving it all up, or just kind of like subtly like indicating certain things and, you know, putting, at least in my opinion, like really cementing a mood, right? And a feeling and an emotion. And I think after that, that's enough to kind of like let the person pick up the cover and say, okay, I'm intrigued and everything like that, right? And I think with variant covers, it's kind of tough too, because it's almost like, you know, there's times when it's like, I often ask, what's the story about? What's this issue about? Mm-hmm. And I may or may not get like a lot of, you know, thorough responses and things like that, but it's okay. You know, I can kind of, get whatever and glean whatever information I can, but there's times too when it's like you want to know some idea, and then knowing those things, I selectively put certain things in and don't, right? So that, you know, we're just kind of saying, hey, let's just bring them in and let's entice them with the art. You know, I think that's great if someone's buying a variant cover for my art, but then they actually are gonna like either read that issue or buy it on like buy a digital version and all stuff, because they're like, I'm intrigued enough by this image to want to read it as well too. You know what I mean? So.
Yes. And I mean, I think something that a lot of cover artists don't really, I can't say a lot, but there are cover artists out there that don't really play true to that. You know, they're like, oh, cool, I'm going to get paid this bunch of money to do this book because it's Marvel, and bam, there's your Iron Man. Doesn't matter what it's Iron Man. This is what you got. And you know, you're on your way. And it's nice to know that, you know, you do have that love and appreciation for this genre. It's not just a paycheck for you, like some people kind of treat it, especially just, you know, variant cover artists or a cover artist. It really is a lot of times just a paycheck, because there's something bigger and better going on. And then there's not a lot of money in comics. I mean, that's real. You know, you can sure it could pay the bills, but it's not going to make anybody filthy rich, you know? So I don't know. It's refreshing to see somebody that does as many exclusive covers as you do put love into what's actually going on beyond the cover. So I dig it, man. I dig it.
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, like you said, I think there's this impression sometimes, like, you know, whatever me, it's like, you know, it is what it is, right? It's like, you know, and comparatively, I've worked in film, I've worked in Silicon Valley, I've worked in comics. Then, you know, let's be real. It's like comics are not the most lucrative in terms of like, you know, monetary gains and things like that. Right. But, you know, to me, in terms of like really great sort of like, you know, exposure to your work, you know, exposure to your name, like it's immensely like fulfilling. You know what I mean?
Fulfilling is the word. Cause I mean, I don't think it could really get any more fulfilling than being this big of a part of the comic book fan base, you know? Cause I mean, this is the future of all entertainment right here. These silly books.
What I mean. It's like, and going back to what I said earlier, it's like, you know, the fact that it is, like I said, it is modern American mythology. You're being a part of that. You're being a part of popular culture. You're carving, you know, a little bit here or there of like, you know, like you said, the way that you see things, and you're infusing, you know, your vision onto, you know, popular culture. And if, and at the end of the day too, it's like, you know, for me, it's like the reason why I care about it is also too, it's like, you know, like I said, I do care about the craft. I care about, you know, also leaving something behind that I can feel, you know, very proud of, you know what I mean? And things like that. Yes. So, you know, I have a lot of pride in that. So it's very rewarding. So
it's awesome, man. I have to ask, I don't get enough artists on this podcast because you guys are busy as shit. How was the support from your family when that you decided, okay, I want to be an artist? Because that's terrifying. It's the most important job on the entire planet. People don't realize that, because without artists, nobody could sketch the blueprints for the brainiacs to do. Or it's really coming down to it, artists are the most important people on the planet, but at the same time, the least paid until you die. So as a parent, as much as I love comics now, if my 7-year-old daughter says, I'm going to try to be a comic book artist, even I'm like, I love it. I love it. But I'm probably going to be supporting you until you're 30, you know, until you figure it out. How was your family receptive of that?
It's tough. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I think also too, they kind of like, were already kind of very much on the fence. Like my, you know, my mom, dad, and, you know, and again, I don't want to be like, I'm just going to play up the stereotypes. They're the typical sort of like Asian parents and things like that. Right. And so it's like, you know, it's already, you know, in terms of like wanting to be an artist, you've already got like, you're already like a couple of chips down, like, you know, in terms of like the support and everything like that, you know, it's hard for them to kind of, you know, especially because they came here to this country and they had nothing, and, you know, they built up what they had. And, you know, for me to kind of like, you know, say, well, I'm going to like, you know, toss in your faces and I'm going to become an artist and everything like that. But I think that they also realize is that that's exactly why they came here, is so we'll have these opportunities, these choices to make, and, you know, things like that. And, you know, ultimately too, at the end of the day, I think that they just kind of knew, like, that's just what was in me. Like, and if it was something else that I was doing, I probably wouldn't be as happy. And I could go down the route of being like, even though I didn't really have the grades to show it, like, you know, a doctor, lawyer, or whatever. But, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, they probably realized I'm just going to be wasting time, because ultimately my path is still going to go down where it's bound to go down, just because I probably, again, would not be a very happy individual and things like that. So, you know, I think that they supported me. And I think that, you know, early on too, you know, being, like I said, working in Silicon Valley, working in film and things like that, they're like, oh, you can kind of make a lucrative sort of, you know, decent way of living and everything like that. And then I said, well, I'm going to go even deeper now. I'm going to get into comic books.
And, I'm going to make even less money than you expected me to make.
No, but it's, it's been good. But it's, they know too, like, you know, I've never been happier. So
see, that's really important too, because I come from a similar situation where I had these extremely high expectations, and I was starting to kind of get there, and I was like, you know, I'm liking this comic book shit, and I fell back into my thing, and I gave up everything to do this. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? But you know, now, I mean, I send them pictures of, look, I'm number one in the charts, and they're like, well, I mean, I don't know if that means you're paying the bills, but it's you haven't asked me for money, and you know.
Goes back to what we were saying too, is that there's this also a methodology and a mindset of how to do it back then. Maybe I don't want to sound like, you know, because again, I'm old myself, but
no, you're,
you
right.
You know, it's like nowadays we have a lot of opportunities to expose our work, whatever that may be that we're doing, if it's podcasting, if it's and YouTubing or art or all of those things. There's more of it out there, there's, you know, than ever before, like, but there's more opportunities if you really work it to show your work, you know what I mean? And to get yourself out there. And I think that's a great opportunity right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything more impressive than a self-sustaining artist, like an artist that can just keep it going. I mean, to me, that's, I'm more impressed by an artist that can just make a living off of
creating happiness on pen and paper or digitally or wherever it may go than an Elon Musk type of character. I really do. Yes, sure, they've got the brains and all of that shit, but when it comes down to it, I mean, it's just, everybody wants to be an artist, and everybody gives up as soon as they realize they can't do it. Most people give up as soon as they realize I can't draw like John Chang, or I can't draw like Jim Lee, or whoever, you know, because but it's the devotion it takes to be able to get to that point. And most of the time you are going to have negative people behind you saying, I don't think that's the right thing to do. And yeah. I don't know. I love it, because it's to see someone like yourself, you know, come from all of that. And I mean, I've got your fucking art on my walls, dude. Like it has been since I've owned it, you know. It's impressive. It really is. And I don't know. It's awesome to see. This is what I love about this fucking industry, man.
I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's I don't ever want to I don't ever want to give the impression that I didn't get support. I think that's the thing, is that I've always gotten the greatest support from my family, then my family now, and everything like that, you know. But you know, the thing is that, you know, it's oftentimes, much like art, there's not really a metric to measure it, right? Yeah. It's really subjective. It's really, a couple people may like your art, and like a vast majority may not, you know what I mean? Or, you know, whatever that may be. And then you may be hot one minute and you're maybe not the next, you know, and all of those things. And I think that that's the thing, is that, you know, being how people understand, I think, how to do and how to make a living and all of those things, you know, and how to do it. It's they're just looking out for us. Do you know what I mean? I think ultimately at the end of the day, they're trying to make sure that we're okay, you know, and things like that. And I think that's the thing, is that I do lectures at, you know, some art schools and things like that every once in a while. And I think that, you know, I always say there's three key components to really, you know, making it as an artist. And there's a lot of nuances, there's a lot of in-betweens and all stuff, but the main key things are, you obviously have to be talented, right?
Yes.
To some degree. Can you get talented and can you work hard? That's the other thing. You can work harder. You can keep practicing. You can get yourself to a certain level, right? And all those things. And then you have to be professional. You have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to kind of sell your work, you know, sell yourself and, you know, all those things. And, you know, stand behind your work and explain it and be a good professional to your clients, right? You know, maybe I'm going on a fourth thing. But the fourth thing is, like you said, it's not to give up, because that's the thing, is that, you know, life happens, and it's always tough to kind of like, say, this is what I want. But that's the thing, is that that doesn't necessarily mean you just say, this is what I want. You're going to have to figure it out. What is it that I need to have happen to make this thing an art career happen, right? What is it? What are all those things that it needs to take? And it's not just, so not giving up is not just say, I'm not going to give up, but it's actually working towards that goal. Actively working towards that goal. Yeah.
Following through. Yeah, man. I love it. We just got a John Chang seminar. This is awesome. I love it. There are a lot of aspiring creators that listen to this show. You're right. What's your Venmo? Venmo, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it, man. So kind of breaking off a little bit. You do a tremendous amount of exclusive covers. I mean, this is, I have to, just out of curiosity, really, what are your kind of standards? Because I imagine you get approached quite often, like now that you see as much as you see your art, what are your standards for that when somebody approaches you for a comic book cover?
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I have my regular clients and things like that, you know, so, you know, I'm always looking out for them, you know, first and foremost, and things like that. We're looking out for also, you know, good opportunities, right? It's like, you know, so it's like, hey, you know, this big story arc is happening, and, you know, and you know, these artists are going to be involved in it. You know, one of the first things that I got kind of like, you know, I'd done The Deceased, and doing Deceased, I was kind of like, I was doing art and I liked it. And somebody's like, hey, you know, do you want to do some covers for DC? I was like, yeah, that's a great opportunity. That rocks. You know what I mean? And then I started getting more and more variants. And then you know, I was hearing whispers of this Turtles book called The Last Ronin and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, A, B, C, and D artists were going to be involved. And I was like, shit, like, this sounds like kind of a big thing.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And things like that. So, you know, getting a, like I said, getting an opportunity to work on stuff like that. And also, too, the other standard is, again, doing stuff that you love, right? It's like, you know, I love horror. I love mechs. I love, you know, the more intense sort of like visual opportunities, which is always great. But it's also nice to be pushed and nice to be taken out of that comfort zone and do things that, yeah, are like stylistically or content wise, not things that you are always that comfortable with, and seeing where that journey takes you. Because I think, you know, art is not one drawing. It's not one piece. It's not, you know, one cover. It's art is the whole journey that you're going to be on for all of your being and all of your existence. And I'm getting very existential here.
No,
but, you know,
this is what we're here for, man. This is awesome. I love it.
Yeah. It's taking that windy road and seeing where it takes you. So,
is there any type of character or title or anything out there that you would just say, I would never do that. This is not my thing.
I honestly don't think so. Like,
yeah, always gonna push it.
I will always say, if you know, and but obviously it's like a scheduling thing. It's, you know, if all the stars align and things like that, and whatever that may be, I'm always inclined to be like, what can I do with this? Like,
that's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. What approach can I take to this? So that we're either like, you know, doing it some justice and kind of like, you know, really polishing up, or we take it to a new place. Right. And it's like, I think that's the beauty about doing variant covers too, is that, you know, I think there's also some leeway in terms of like, you know, the publishers that are like, yeah, we want them to kind of like, you know, we want to allow them to do their own thing and things like that. And sometimes we get great opportunities to just do, you know, crazy things. And I think that normally in a normal sort of like, in that sort of regular sort of like, you know, cover A and cover B, we may not get that opportunity, but, you know, with variant covers, I think we really get to push it. And I think that's why you see such a wide range of styles, mm-hmm. artists, and all those things in the variant, you know, industry. And I think that that's, you know, to me, it's, you know, I've always loved guys like Del Otto and Perillo.
There's some amazing guys. Ones out there. I mean, it's an endless list, really. It's crazy to think how many amazing artists out there there are like that. But it's awesome, man. So, I guess I have to ask at this point, is there a care? I've got a million questions for you, man. I want to get ahead of myself.
Sure, man.
is there a character out there that you cannot wait to get your hands on?
There's a ton. And
yeah,
you know, that's the thing is that, you know, it's, I've already had an opportunity. Like I said, I've been very blessed, very lucky to have worked on a lot of things that I grew up with, also cinematically too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, having to, you know, being able to work on, like I said, Iron Man since, you know, the first Marvel movie, and, you know, helping to design the Hulkbuster suit, and, you know, doing a huge part in designing Shredder and the Turtles, and, you know, all those things, and working on Transformers, and, you know, and then working, you know, I loved Voltron and Godzilla growing up, and getting to work on Pacific Rim, you know, cinematically and everything like that. Again, just mind blowing, sort of like dream come true. And then being able to now in comic books really kind of like be very expressive with my own style and working on characters. Like, you know, I've gone to work on, you know, Batman, Joker, mm-hmm. you know, the Batman Who Laughs, and, you know, you know, a lot of independent comic books too, and we're getting to work on The Last Ronin and the Transformers, you know, all that stuff has kind of been, you know, very, very blessed, you know. But, you know, with that being said, I think that there's a lot out there that still is yet to be done, right?
Man, I mean, my mind, there's a million things I want to see you do. Like, yeah. I mean, if, just off the top of my head, I would love a Moon Knight cover from you, dude. Like, I think that would be the gem on my wall. I think that's probably the only thing I think I could top this deceased cover here, man. But I mean, you have this style that, I mean, I would love to see you do any. I mean, I'm not even a anime or a manga fan, but I would dig like a Sailor Moon cover from you, dude. Like the shit that you do. Like it's
And I think that goes back to, you know, when you said earlier, like, where does this all come from? And, you know, and I think that I get asked this question a lot. Like, I do a lot of conventions. I do a lot of these, you know, talks with, you know, art students and things like that. And, you know, these interviews, and I always get asked, what's your influences? Right. And I don't really, like, I feel like when I answer it this way, I feel like I'm copping out, but I'm not copping out. And I honestly am being very truthful and genuine here. It really does come from everywhere. Right.
I think that's the only right answer, to be honest, if you're a fan, then yes, it came from everywhere.
Like I said, I'm a very visual person. And I always talk about the visual vernacular, the visual vocabulary. And right. And it's like, for me, I'm always absorbing it. Right. If I'm looking at architecture, if I'm looking at a fine art painting, and if I'm looking at graffiti on the street, if I'm looking at nature, if I'm looking at texture of something that's, you know, even concrete or a rock or, you know, whatever it may be, it's all like, it's always kind of like being embedded in that visual vocabulary, right? I'm always absorbing it. So, like I said, whether it be graffiti, whether it be anime, whether it be, you know, comic books, you know, or whether it be, you know, manga, whether it be, you know, Renaissance art, impressionistic art, all of that stuff. If I have an opportunity to kind of like help and do something to kind of like throw my hat into those, you know, those genres or things, something like that, I would love the opportunity to do it, you know. So, you know, like you said, if I was to be asked to do a Sailor Moon, I'd be like, hell yeah, like, you know, what I mean, like,
that's so cool hearing coming from the guy that did this fucking deceased cover right here. Oh, the Sailor Moon, like, that's broad strokes, man. I love it. That's
lately I've been doing more like sort of like cartoonish styles, just to see if it will, because I think that's the other thing too, is that everyone wants you to kind of be a certain thing, and I think that it's always nice to kind of evolve, right?
Yeah.
And if you throw out something that, you know, is like you said, like if I do the Batman Who Laughs and the Ice Cream Man's that are very intense, mm-hmm. and then I do something that's very cartoonish, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's my style. I'm just taking a step on a journey, right?
Yes.
And again, wherever that leads me, you know, and that sort of thing too. So, you know, if I get that opportunity, like I said, I'll always jump at it. So
I dig it. I dig it, man. Yeah. I mean, because look, Scotty Young's a great example of that too, because he's got his little baby stuff, and then he's got everything else that he does that's not his, you know, baby Marvel stuff. And it's, but at the same time, you could relate both styles to the guy. It's okay to have different styles all relate to one person. And I think that if anything, that's the most impressive thing you could be, you know?
And I think that's the thing, is that, you know, I think that when we talk about art and artists, I think everyone wants to have this, there's this impression that it's just about, I think, us, right? Mm. And it's just about us individually and isolated. But I think really what it is, it's very communal, right? So
yes.
Yeah, if I'm doing art and I'm sharing it with you, like, you love it, you dig it. And then if I like am changing the style a little bit, I may share it with like a new group of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it becomes a like a really, like, it's a communal journey, right?
God,
like,
forbid the artist expand his audience. Jesus Christ. Maybe not everybody wants to be terrified in their comic book covers, you know? Like, I love it, man. I love that you have the right mindset in this to have a forever career in doing this. I don't see anybody getting dull on your work. I know you said that sometimes you're hot, sometimes you're not. I as long as you keep putting out stuff like this, man, and you're gonna be going on forever, as long as you want to, I guess. I mean, as long as you, but like I said, there's not a lot of money in this to keep people motivated, but at this point, it's the love, man. And it really does show through in your work and everything you do. Like, this entire conversation has been really just a showcase of how you truly appreciate and love this goddamn industry. So it's awesome, man. I probably have time for one more question because I know you're pressed for time, man. And I got a long list here.
You got to select that one choice question here,
right? So. Because this is kind of like the origin episode, if you will, because I have a feeling there's going to be another time or two we get together in the mic.
We got to franchise this thing. We got to turn it into like sequels in here. Let's do it, man.
I want to talk about your first breakout experience into comics. That first, you're going to do a comic book. I want you to do this cover. What was the situation there? Who approached you? What was the feeling after being a comic book lover like you are? Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
a little bit.
It's kind of weird because prior to doing that, it's kind of weird because am I getting some sort of like weird light on me? Anyways,
I bet your face is kind of warm right now, man. You got a light coming across your face right now for the listeners. You're just listening.
It's a beam of a higher divine spirit here.
Yeah, like Cyclops is coming in on you, dude.
I think what's weird is that I've always seen characters and properties as those things, right? So it's like, when I worked on the Iron Man movies, I didn't really distinguish it too much from the fact that, hey, I'm working on Iron Man. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So you already kind of had that feeling before you got the comic book cover.
Don't get me wrong.
It's surreal.
Yeah, it's totally surreal. And seeing it on the big screen and the Avengers and all those things, I was just like, oh my God, I'm just like, I'm on cloud nine, right? Hmm. But yes, there was that sort of like, so, you know, with that being said, I kind of had that feeling a little bit, but then I did have that sort of like breakout sort of moment. And I was always kind of already doing, you know, independent titles here or there, but I guess the big sort of break we already talked about was Deceased, right?
That was the one that put you on the map. All right, cool. So, I mean, that's the one that got my attention for sure.
Right. So what's weird, just to give more context around the whole thing, is that I didn't really, because I had already been working in film, I didn't really understand what was happening when I was doing Deceased, let me just say. Like, I'd been, like, doing conventions already, too, and I've already kind of been around variant covers, but I didn't really understand what variant covers were, right? Like, I knew was that I was, like, walking by some tables, and, like, I would see, like, a Perillo or, like I said, a Del Otto or Matina and things like that. And, you know, these, I would say, kind of like offshoots, because they weren't kind of like part of the regular sort of, like,
right. They weren't a B cover for sure.
Right. Like a, you know, main cover, B cover, whatever it may be. And I was like, oh my God, these are fantastic paintings and all stuff. I'd love to be, you know, I'd love to be doing those, you know, someday, but I didn't really know that they were like a thing. Right. And whatnot. And then I was always kind of like, I had a group of people who were always very supportive. One of those, you know, folks was Sean Hidashko from Comics Elite. And he would always come by and be like, hey, I really love your art. I'd love to get you on a variant cover someday or do a cover. And I'm like,
I got
to
shake dude's hand, man. Seriously. Because I mean, I think all of the, I think these are all Comics Elite variants I have here.
I
got to shake that dude's hand for exposing you in this way.
Yeah. And he was always like, and I never knew what that meant. Like, he was just like, oh, let's do one. And I was like, okay, okay. And then I was at, you know, I think it was Emerald City one year. Yeah. And some guys came up and looked at my work and, you know, super friendly. And they're like, we're from DC. DC Comics, and we'd love to, you know, we're doing
DC,
this
DC thing. Comics, they had to reiterate it.
Yeah, I was like, who? no, just kidding. I was like, I was really excited. I was really kind of like school, you know, fanboying really, really hard and all that stuff. But they were just like, you know, we have this thing coming up with some DC characters, and Yeah, I had already done a couple pieces that were kind of like horrific versions of some of the characters, and they were like, "We really think that you're built for this and all stuff." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm your man. Awesome. I would love to do it."
That's so cool, just, man.
Yeah, it took off from there.
I can't imagine the, I mean, like you said, you had that Iron Man feeling, and then I guess it'd be about 8 years then, since, you know, between Iron Man 1 and Deceased number 1, something like that, maybe 10 years,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you do have quite the gap before you get that, oh shit, I'm doing something new in comics again. Like, so, man, it's, and to be approached by DC in that way, you know, for them to come to you, you know, I mean, it says a lot, man. It says quite a bit, because they're,
well, I think the thing that really kind of like really floored me in that conversation was that they were like, "We want you to do these characters, and we want you to do it in your style." Like,
yeah, that's, and the, I was like, that's the, yeah, attention getter right there, your style.
Yeah, then, and for the longest time, it was always been like, you know, because like you said, sometimes the my style can be a little bit more, I guess you could say, intense and things like that. And I was like, you sure? You like, you want my style? Like, I'll give it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You may regret it.
That's so awesome, man. Well, I couldn't be happier this all worked out for you, John. Really, like, I'm a fan. I didn't, when I first discovered your work on Deceased, I thought that I had a million things that I had to go back and find. I didn't realize that you were just breaking out, man. So I couldn't understand why, when I googled your name at first, I was like, where is everything else, you know? Like, now I google your name and it's just scroll. Like, I was sewing some people at Mile High Comics the other day, and I was like, I'm looking for John Jiang covers, and I had to kind of, I was like, "You don't know who John Jiang is?" And I showed them on Google, and they're like, "What the fuck is this?" I got, yeah, man. I mean, it's it's hard to find anybody out there that is not. You just have to. Really, the only thing I could think of is if you're just afraid, you don't like scary things. Like, that's the only reason I could think of why you would pass up on your books, man. So I'm really, I know that you're pressed for time. I do have an entire notepad of questions for next time, though, brother. You sort of know how to answer a question. I like that.
maybe too much in some people's
opinion. Never, but, you know, never.
Yeah,
dude,
yeah.
If I ask one question and it's an hour long answer, that's the best podcast I've ever had. Dude, really, John, it's been an absolute pleasure. I know you're a busy man. We will be in touch very soon, sir. Thank you for everything that you've done.
Like I said, I'm very, very happy to be on the show. I'm super humbled, and, you know, this has been fun. And like I said, we'll do it again for sure.
Sweet, brother. All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers. Right.
Peace, guys. Thanks. Later.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan Jay.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Well, there you have it. Episode 373 in the books. Another creator, John Jiang. He's been cornered. A great one.
I think it was, at least. I don't know. It's just, like, my opinion, man, but I was a fan. I strongly suggest, if you're not familiar with his work, get out, seek it out now, and get in on it while it's early, while the man's career is still mighty young, because he's destined for amazing things. I have no doubts about him. He doesn't show any sign of letting up, and that's... Those are the signs, right? Those are the signs for a great comic book destiny. So, yeah, check out all of John Jiang's work. Remember, leave those 5-star reviews on Good Pods, Podchaser, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can leave a 5-star review.
You know, I mean, shoot, if you got a question, maybe, or even like a guest suggestion, put it within a review. You know, it'll be huge. So, yeah, reviews, got to have them. Also, yeah, cheerstocomics.com. If you're looking for any Cheers to Comics content, head on over to cheerstocomics.com. I can't say it right now. And yeah, and also, when you click on the store button there, it'll take you to shopcheerstocomics.com, where I am having my Cyber Monday sale. Oh yeah, if you're not familiar, you're a new listener, you weren't aware, Cheers to Comics is more than just a podcast now. It's also a retail store as well. So head on over to shopcheerstocomics.com, and while you're shopping all the way up until the 3rd, December 3rd, you can use code CYBER at checkout and save yourself 25%. And you know, in the midst of capitalism and whatnot. So support a small business, make it Cheers to Comics. All right, I'll talk to you the next time there's things about comics to talk about. In the meantime, I command that you stay safe and read responsibly. Cheers, fuckers.
Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
I'm John Chang.
This is Drew Zuck.
This is Mark Russell.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
Podcast recommendations, you ask? Brian Wayne here, co-curator of The Apocalypse. And I know that sounds gnarly. That's because it is gnarly, man. The Apocalypse. What is The Apocalypse? The Apocalypse is a culmination of the gnarliest podcast, independent podcast, the internet has to offer. So instead of trying to go to Twitter the next time you need a new podcast to listen to and try to get Twitter famous, podcast recommendations, please. Just think The Apocalypse, man. And it's ironic because The Apocalypse is only the beginning. It's only the beginning. Just go to podchaser.com. It's in the top list. The top list in the whole world. So whether you're looking for true crime, sports, role-playing, I don't know, anything. Think of a podcast. It's on The Apocalypse. It's like The Apocalypse with a D. And do not forget to follow The Apocalypse on Twitter as well. Once again, that is The Apocalypse. If you're looking for a podcast recommendation, The Apocalypse is sure to have something for you.